Travolting presents Bobbin for Robin. Hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore. Covering House of D. Enjoy the episode. This is the vibe of the whole movie we're about to talk about.
The whole movie.
This entire movie is a big 1 hour and a half fucking long Grey's Anatomy episode with no goddamn plot.
So, Stuart, I got one thing to say.
What?
House of D's
Nuts.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode covering House of D.
What a story,
we'll be back
Mark.
Next week covering...
I didn't know that. I just... you're telling me now for the first...
We'll be back next week for our episode on 2005's Robots.
Yeah.
Have a great week, folks. Thank you, as always, to Rebecca for the graphic design, Michael for the theme music. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. No.
Dead ass, do you want to do that?
That would be a funny bit.
Would be a funny bit.
Stuart, there's a this...
not zero sum chance.
There's this YouTube page called Lights, Camera, Jackson.
Good.
And it's like this... The original idea was like a kid who did movie reviews.
Sorry, Miss Jackson.
Woo. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Go ahead.
He was like 12 or something, basically.
Yeah.
And he was just like, oh, I never review. But then he like.
Well, so you go back.
I mean, yeah, I'm 12 and I'm going to review a movie. But then he like became an adult and kept it up. And he developed like a deeply surreal sense of humor. Mm-hmm. And there was like one episode where he's like, my mother always told me that if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. And then he just sat there in silence for like 15 minutes for the rest of the review.
Why? What?
Because he couldn't say anything nice about the movie. So he didn't say anything at all. We should do that on this episode. Just trend this release a silent episode.
Well, you fucked up the bit, Jeff.
What?
The bit is you say that joke, yeah. And then we just stay quiet the entire episode. But we've already lost the bit.
Yeah.
Lights, Camera, Jackson. He's only got like 3,000 subscribers. He's not very big.
He's big amongst like the internet society. So we're covering this week David Duchovny's House of D.
Yep.
Which is like a terrible title for this movie, IMO. This movie's like only tangentially about the House of D.
This movie is tangentially about nothing. But yeah. This movie came out in 2004. You already mentioned it's David Duchovny. David Duchovny. Who's David Duchovny?
David Duchovny is cashing in his X-Files blind check for this movie.
Is he in X-Files?
He's Mulder in X-Files.
I know. I'm just saying this for the audience that don't know much about X-Files.
Trying to get better about
like things that might seem obvious to us, but understanding our listeners.
Yeah, David Duchovny, who writes, directs, and stars in this movie. He played Mulder on X-Files for like 10 years.
Only 10?
Nine. Well, he's done. He's come back to the well.
Okay,
but it was like he did the first 9 seasons of the X-Files from like 92 to 2002.
This is the newer X-Files.
This is just the OG X-Files.
Huh?
Yeah, X-Files from 1992 to 2002.
Isn't there like an older?
No, you're thinking of the Twilight Zone.
God damn it!
You're thinking of the Twilight Zone.
I was thinking about the Twilight Zone.
He does the X-Files. For 9 years, which is 9 seasons, and the movie that comes out between seasons 5 and 6.
Mm-hmm.
And he's now fresh off the X-Files. That was a 22 episode show. Mm-hmm. So that's like a big time commitment. He's probably working on that like 10 months out of the year.
Yeah.
And now he's free, has a lot of money from doing the X-Files, and decides that he wants to write and direct a movie. His passion project, he's cashing in the blank check from the X-Files. And so he writes this movie, House of D. And secures financing for it, which he struggled with for a while.
Yeah, read the script.
Because I found I found an interview with him about this movie. And he was basically just like, I wanted to direct a movie. I wrote the script. And I was only able to secure financing because I had to get a big star in a role of the movie. But I couldn't play the lead because I needed to direct the movie. Which is why he plays the older... He originally wrote Pappas for himself.
Mm.
And was then like, I need to be in less of this movie.
Yeah.
So he makes himself the narrator, so he doesn't... He's only in the beginning and the end. And then for the most part, he's just directing.
Yeah. Instead he got Robin
and Williams. So he's got Robin Williams, who... In spite of being on a downswing, of, as we've talked about, is still a name for a tiny indie like this. You can definitely secure financing off of Robin Williams at this time.
Yeah, my curiosity is why Robin said yes to this movie.
It's nice, sentimental.
Is it the mental handicap element of it? You think?
I think it's a mix of this movie's sweet. This movie's very sweet. That's a happy ending. And he gets to play a mentally challenged guy with a heart of gold. He's done this before to great success.
Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Mentally challenged?
I shouldn't say to great success, but he has done this a few times.
Robin Williams.
Yeah, Jack.
Oh, well...
He's played childlike characters.
I would say that's a little different only because in this movie he is actually playing mentally challenged.
Yeah, I mean, but he saw De Niro do it in Awakenings and was like, I can do that.
But also he wasn't mentally challenged in Awakenings either.
He was behind.
Yeah, I feel like playing a kid in an adult's body asks for a different thing from an actor than playing mentally challenged.
Yes. Well, ultimately, the point being, he gets to what Duchovny says is he cast him because he is very good at playing young, childlike figures. I'm trying to find the exact quote here. Robin has access to, we all know, a real childlike quality. He's really in touch with that part of himself, so it was so important to this role. I'm actually just going to read the whole Duchovny quote here.
Okay.
The question, what led you to casting Robin Williams in the role of Pappas? Is it Pappas or Pop-ass? Unclear. I knew I had to get a bankable star to kind of drive the independent financing. That's how these movies are made a lot. You know, they call them independent, but they're actually pretty dependent. And I had a kid lead, which is bad because there's no kid stars. They don't exist. Macaulay Culkin, maybe for a little while, but that was it. You don't have kids that drive financing.
Disrespect to Haley Joel Osment.
You don't have kids that drive financing. So I had supporting roles that I had to hinge my financing on, which is tricky and difficult, scary, and could have easily doomed this picture to never get made. But I was lucky to get Robin early on. He was the first person to ask, and he was loyal. And that was really the linchpin of getting the movie made. And I wanted Robin because I always conceived of Pappas' character as a man among boys, which is really what he is. And Robin has a kind of physicality. He's very powerful. He hurt me a couple times just shaking my hand. And I'm not tiny, you know. But Robin's like that.
But I'm not tiny, you know.
He touches you like that. And I wanted that strength because I wanted him to be somewhat scary if he snapped with these kids. And then Robin has access, we all know, to a real childlike quality. He's really in touch with that part of himself. That was obviously so important to this role. And so Robin gets cast as the mentally handicapped janitor.
Yeah.
Who hangs out with Anton Yelchin for this whole movie.
Yeah.
And Robin makes choices.
Yes, he does.
Well,
the biggest point I was going to say is, we've seen this before with, there's multiple actors where it was, Forrest Gump is, the main, prescient moment of this. But where a lot of actors...
Lieutenant Diane Oscarine.
I can play mentally challenged.
Yeah.
I can do that. And then they do it, and they're like, oh, no.
Yeah, maybe, oh, no.
So when I saw Robin in this role, I did not know the context for his character. Yeah. And then he comes on screen, and then, the R word gets thrown around, 80 times. I'm like, oh, no. Ooh. So this felt... That's why I only pointed out as, a minor difference between the other roles he's done, because this feels like a proving yourself kind of role.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, Robin takes this role because you said... Happier ending. It's a nice, sweet movie. Little
Robin
indie.
Likes a sweet movie. We talked about this with Jacob the Liar and Bicentennial Man.
He likes sweet movie, yep.
When he has creative control, he wants a nice, sweet movie about a guy who just is does good for other people.
Yeah.
And that's ostensibly the role he's playing in this movie.
Right. But then he's also my career is kind of going down the toilet. I should do something that's prestigious.
Yeah.
Let's play him mentally handicapped.
Yeah. And he's very invested in this role.
Yes, he is.
And
you can tell.
You can tell. The amount of... He's wearing a lot of prosthetics.
Oh. Really?
Yes. He has prosthetic ears and prosthetic teeth.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
You can kind of tell when you look at him.
Yeah, you're right. Man.
Doesn't he look weird?
Yeah, he does.
He looks like an AI version. He looks like if you went to AI and typed Robin Williams, like what would appear? Like it'll just like 10% off.
The ears, especially. I never would have clocked that.
Duchovny was asked, why did he use prosthetics to alter his appearance? And Duchovny said about Robin, he came up with that stuff. I didn't want him to change physically because I said, you don't have a syndrome that I know. You're not handicapped in that way. This is a mythical guy. He's slow, but we're not going to diagnose him and go to a book and say, this is who we're going to be. And therefore, I didn't want him to look any different. But Robin, as an actor, uses his imagination, uses all these tools they have access to. He said, I want to do something with my teeth and my ears. And I said, okay. And then the bill came and I was outraged because I couldn't afford it on the film's budget. It was like 40 grand. It was a lot. And it was like day of shooting that I would give up. And I would have made the bad decision of not using it. But Robin really wanted to do it. And it was a much better idea than if he hadn't. It was money well spent. I would happen to disagree with you, David.
I would disagree with you as well.
I don't think he needs the prosthetics.
You know why? Because I barely noticed it.
Yeah. He did not need the prosthetics. And maybe you just shouldn't have written a movie about a kindly disabled man who helps. The whole time I'm watching this and I'm like, well, this is probably just autobiographical for Duchovny. I'm assuming that this is like his
life story.
His Fablemans or something. You know what this movie isn't?
Yeah.
You know what he's like, yeah, there's a few things I pulled from my childhood in there, but for the most part, it's a wholly original story. I'm like, okay, so this character didn't exist for you.
Which that I could also tell.
Because ultimately, can I tell you what I think my real takeaway from this whole movie is? I have a laundry list of things that David Duchovny has fetishes of.
Yeah.
That's what I walk away from this movie with.
What does he have a fetish of, Jeff?
Well, I there's like, number one, just this movie is like 50% him just talking about his penis.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I would whack it in the shower. And, you know, I really like this girl. And
this girl played by
Zelda Williams.
Yes. Robin really Williams' daughter.
But a lot of this movie is him like, yeah, I got tiny balls, but I don't mind flat chested girls. Just like talking about this. And then I'm like, something I clock is every single woman who Duchovny's character is attracted to in this movie, mm-hmm. including his mother, played by Taya Leone, who is Duchovny's real-life wife,
mm-hmm.
is always smoking a cigarette.
Hmm.
And there is a genuine phenomenon of smoking fetishes due to the oral fixation of it. And I'm watching this movie and I'm like, nobody else is smoking in this movie. Except for the three women who he is attracted to, who always have a cigarette. I'm just like, David.
He's interested.
Are you saying something?
He's attracted to women smoking cigarettes.
Yes. And
weird.
He puts his real life wife in the movie, always with a cigarette. He puts, and like it's set in the 60s, 70s. People were smoking a lot.
Yeah.
Not like that's a thing. It's just like nobody else is smoking.
But nobody else except for the women.
It's his mother. It's his present day wife.
Did you pick up on like a little bit of
and then it's his, and it's the French woman at the store he works at.
Yeah. And then, I'm so glad you brought that up about the mother, because there was like a scene where he's in the shower and she comes in to use the restroom.
Yeah. He says that was a real thing that happened to him. Was he grew up in a small apartment. And so like if you had to use the restroom and someone's in the shower, too bad. You went in.
But he directs that scene, and Anton Yelchin's performance is dialed in a way where it doesn't feel great.
Yeah, look.
It's very Oedipus-y.
Look.
Yeah.
This movie.
Yeah.
This movie is very weird.
This movie is very weird.
And look, everybody's, you know, sense of attraction is like kind of shaped by their parents in a way. And David, if you wanted to address that, you maybe should have like made that the point of the movie.
But you're just kind of dangling.
Every time I'm trying to focus on the plot, I'm just like, I feel like I'm learning something else about David Duchovny's sex life that I didn't want to learn.
right? Because, sorry, you mentioned the focus of this movie.
That's because he casts his real life wife as his mother in the movie.
Yeah, and it makes it really weirder.
And so because it's his real life wife, he is shooting her in glamorous ways.
Yes.
He wants her to look beautiful because he sees her as beautiful. Mm-hmm. But it just like kind of results in a movie where you're like, it's like very Fablemans, but in a way that the Fablemans is aware of what it's doing mm-hmm. and making that part of the sauce.
Yeah.
This movie's just, you're just kind of watching it like, does boy want to bag his mom?
Yeah. Well, what I was getting at was like, you mentioned like, you know, the movie, because the movie doesn't necessarily pay extra focus on it, we're left here thinking like, I don't feel so good because like, I'm not so sure that this is the point of the movie. And if this is just like an unintentional subconscious decision the director is doing here, which is why it feels uncomfortable. Yeah. If it were like a conscious decision of like making a point of it, then you're like, okay, I can understand you're trying to say something with this. Mm-hmm. But to that degree though, that's the whole movie.
Yeah.
The whole movie is scenes that aren't a focus of the movie.
Yeah.
Because what is the focus of the movie?
Unclear.
Unclear. I don't know what this movie is about.
It's a very like first screenplay.
Yeah.
Because like just to like get right into it, the movie is about David Duchovny is like a deadbeat husband and father. He missed his son's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
He promised his son will go riding on a bike. And then he shows
he's
up
in Paris.
His son's asleep. He's in Paris for reasons.
Paris, France, to make sure.
Yeah, Paris, France, as opposed to Paris, Texas.
Yeah.
But he gets back to the house, and his French wife is like, "Sacre bleu, you are not in my son's birthday. Croissant, don't make a baguette." He's like, "Escargot."
Oh my God, he on X Games mode.
She's like, "I get there. I come down with the baguette and the espresso for you, Napoleon." And comes down. And he's like, "Yeah, I'm just kind of a shitty father. Let me." And she's like, "What happened? What is your story? Why do you not here?" And he's like, "Let me tell you my story."
It all started when I was 13 years old.
When I was 13 in Greenwich Village, New York. Like, wait, what?
30 years ago.
This movie is he comes home and his wife's like, "You are a shitty husband. You shitty father. Look at the kid." And he's like, "Let me tell you about my life."
But again, is this movie about why he's a shitty father husband? Because the movie doesn't pay any attention to that.
No, because that's the weird thing. It's like it cuts off before he gets to Paris. And you're just like, wait, I thought he was explaining why he was a shitty husband.
Yeah, exactly.
And then her takeaway at the end is like, you create an unresolved trauma. You go to New York. Ah. I'm doing like a really shitty Ratatouille. What's her name in Ratatouille?
Prosciutto parmesan.
Prosciutto parmesan. Baguette a la mode.
We should shoot ourselves.
You sure about that? You sure about that? You sure about that?
Colette,
yes. Linguini! Ratatouille, good movie, unlike that.
So, because, yeah, you're right. Like, the whole thing is, like, I'm trying to explain to you why this story 30 years ago when I was a 13-year-old in Greenwich Village, New York, which is why I'm a shitty husband and father. But then when we come back to modern day, we're not explaining that story anymore. We're explaining why he misses New York.
No, because like
it totally changes.
Yeah, there's no because like what the movie is attempting to do is explain like that he has a bunch of unprocessed trauma and it's why he can't like be a father in the present day. And it's like, I get it. Better way to explain this information and like connect these two threads because the circle is not getting squared.
Yeah.
Anyway,
this movie is really bad. What did you give it?
1.5.
I gave it half. I give it a half star, I'm pretty sure.
Because like you go into the past and Robin Williams looks insane.
What is the poster?
It's just they're two heads.
What is this? It's like a chicken but with a woman's head on it. Like what are these feathers?
What the hell is happening there?
Paint strokes?
I think it's paint strokes.
But that's a chicken, right? I'm not crazy.
No, I think it's just paint strokes.
And then it's Robin and Anton Yelchin.
Like, this movie's called House of D because...
Why is it called House of D?
No, it's because the women's house of detention. And he like has like three conversations with the woman in the detention center in the prison. But like, that's not the main threat of the movie. That's like maybe the Q plot. And for some reason, that's what the movie is titled after.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even fucking know.
The House of D, House of Detention Center that a woman is imprisoned in that he talks to at night and has a relationship with.
Yeah.
Like a friendship.
He talks to like three times.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's not like he's talking to Robin and other people much more.
He's much closer to Robin.
He's closer to basically everybody in his life.
Yeah. Including his mom.
Yeah, including his mom, who does die.
Who dies. But then the movie would have you believe that like my trauma with my mother. Okay. The trauma with your mother is that she died, but it's not that you had a bad relationship with her. But there's it's very tonally dissonant because it's like, I had a really hard childhood. It's like, well, it looks like you and your mom had a good relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, she died when you were young and that sucks. But like I'm unclear of what hurdle you're overcoming.
Yes.
I'm unclear because are you
the ultimate hurdle is he ran away from New York to escape all his problems and he has to go back and like
as a 13-year-old?
As a 13-year-old, he has to go back when he's 40 something and talk to Pappas again.
It sounds like when you were a kid, Jeff, like 11, 12, maybe even younger, and you got in trouble and like you were like, I'm going to run away from home. This is bullshit. And then you didn't because you were like, I'm going to freeze.
Yeah.
I feel like that is a thing that has happened in a lot of kids' lives.
Yeah.
Maybe it hasn't happened to you, but it's happened to me. But it's like everybody goes through that thing where it's like you do something wrong, you get in trouble and you're very rebellious and you're like, I'm going to run away from home. And you may even go as far as to pack a bag. Some kids go as far as to walk down the driveway.
Yeah.
Like it's all gestures and it's all like a show. But it's like this is a movie about what if a kid actually did it.
He doesn't run away from home in that way.
In a rebellious
sense. Everybody who he cares about is either cutting him off or dying.
Yeah, and telling him to run away.
And so he's like, well, I guess I got to run.
And the moral of the story is all those kids come home eventually.
Yeah.
Except for the ones that got kidnapped off the streets by human trafficking.
Yeah, that's true.
That's another story.
He's like, let me tell you about my life. He's born in Greenwich Village. He lives in a studio apartment with his mom, played by Taya Leone.
He's friends with Robin Williams. He's
friends with Robin Williams, who's the
janitor of
the mentally challenged janitor at the Catholic school he goes to.
Yeah.
The one thing about like
Bonier,
I want to throw
my shoe at the screen.
The one thing about like. Actor movies directed by an actor is like they are able to secure like pretty decent cast usually just based on the fact of like
I'm an actor,
I know people. Mm-hmm. Like Frank Langella has a thankless role in this. It's like the reverend at the school.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, yes, it is me, Frank Langella. You unfortunately have committed crimes. You are going to get kicked out of the school.
What's that movie where it's like, if you push this button, you'll get $1 million, but somebody will die?
The Box.
The Box.
Yeah.
Cameron Diaz, James Marsden. He's the guy that comes with the box.
Yeah.
It's so good. Like, not that the movie's not good. I'm saying he's really good.
Yeah.
Like, he shows up and he's like,
The Box.
He's like, I'm going to do my best. Like, what's his name again?
Frank Langella.
I'm going to do my best for Frank Langella.
It's like, notoriously kind of an asshole, but...
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
But it's fine. Like, it's fine for the context of us talking about him in this movie.
Well, it's like he... You're James Marsden, Cameron Diaz, and he puts the box in. In this box, there's a button. If you push this button, you will immediately receive $1 million. At the same time, a random person... person you do not know will die. You have 24 hours to think about this decision. Then he gets up and walks away.
Yeah.
Great.
Da Box.
You know that movie ends?
No, don't tell me. I haven't seen it. I actually want to watch it. I like that director.
Who's the director?
I'm forgetting his name, but he did Donnie Darko and
Richard Kelly. Hills.
Richard Kelly, yeah. But I want to watch Da Box.
Da Box.
David Duchovny. So he's friends with Robin Williams, and the movie is plotless from here on. It's like
there's recollections
of him in French class, essentially getting their French teacher to say like American swear words.
Yeah,
and need you all to fuck us. He's like boner, get off your boner,
hap penis.
Mm-hmm. It's fine. It's like a mildly amusing anecdote.
I'm laughing really hard.
It's a mildly amusing anecdote. And then
what you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard.
And then like what he has a crush on a girl in the other school,
played by Zelda
Melissa
Williams.
Who's played by Zelda Williams. Is this her first acting role?
No, I think she was in like something like maybe her first speaking role, but definitely like not her first role in a movie.
Who, I mean, she's clearly cast because Robin.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
It's her second movie. She was in 9 months as little girl number three in ballet class. This is her first like real movie.
Yeah.
And she's like not going to become like.
Did I know that she voiced Kuvira in Legend of Korra? Did I know that?
You probably didn't know that, right?
Shocked. She does do a lot of voice acting. Right?
She mainly has become a voice actor.
Yeah.
She's currently voicing Spitfire on Transformers Earthspark. That's cool. But she's mostly a voice actor. She directed a movie recently.
Lisa Frankenstein.
Lisa Frankenstein.
Yeah.
She's like, you know, cool. She's probably just like, Dad, I want to, you know, can I act in a movie?
I want to do this acting thing. We'll see what it's all about.
She's fine in this.
See what it's all about.
She's like a fine kid performance,
do
right?
Do this acting thing. Maybe, yeah.
But he has a crush on her, and he's trying to figure out how to seduce her. And so he like gets into her apartment via his meat delivery job. And she lives in a fancy apartment, and he takes her to the dance. And his mom's like, you can't focus on girls. You need to focus on your future. I gave up everything for you. And if you don't like succeed, then I'm going to kill myself. And that's what happens. She kills herself with pills or has brain. Well, actually, she tries to kill herself with pills.
She goes in a coma.
She winds up brain dead, but yeah. She's still hooked up to the machine. She's still breathing functionally. The body is still alive.
Yeah, but the
and then Anton Yelkin's like, and he rips the plug out of the wall. Anton Yelkin, quite good in this, I think.
When's Anton Yelkin ever
bad? A good kid performance.
Yeah. Have you seen Green Room?
I've not seen Green Room.
Should watch Green Room. Great Anton Yelkin and Patrick Stewart.
Is that his final performance?
No.
No, it's not.
Oh, Anton Yelkin?
Yeah.
No, because Beyond was, I believe.
He does three movies the year after. He does Thoroughbreds, Rememory, and We Don't Belong Here.
Okay. Green Room is before Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah. Green Room is the year before Star Trek Beyond. Star Trek Beyond is the movie he dies immediately, like, before it comes out.
Yeah.
Which sucks.
Watch Green Room.
Watch Star Trek Beyond.
I've seen Star Trek Beyond.
Well, I'm just saying, like, to the listener at home.
Watch Green Room. Anton Yelkin's great. The main draw, Patrick Stewart in that movie.
Patrick Stewart's a neo-Nazi, right?
He plays a neo-Nazi.
I am a neo-Nazi.
Fucking terrifying neo-Nazi, though. Yeah. It's like, he's scary. I don't want to talk about this movie. So he's friends with this one woman whose name is...
We're talking about the prison lady?
Yeah.
He just calls her Lady. Her real name is Bernadette.
Hey, Lady!
He's walking... No, he's what it is he's walking down the street, and he's like all sad, and there's a woman like leaning against a window who sees him and like yells down to him, and he talks to her for a minute. She's in the prison, the house of detention.
Mm-hmm.
And she gives him like life advice about talking to girls. And so he keeps coming back there for advice.
Mm-hmm.
And they develop like a little rapport. It's what the movie is named after, but it's like it's a tiny element. I don't think it's a major point.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Pappas, who's Robin Williams' character, is getting upset with him because he's like neglecting their friendship to hang out with a girl. And so Robin like takes all of his coins to the Hudson River and throws them in and is like, I'm making a wish. And then he's all sad and he walks back and he steals a bike and loses his job because of it. And Antonioka feels bad, so he confesses to Frank Langella, I stole the bike.
He's trying to take the blame for it.
And then Robin Williams is like, no, actually, I stole the bike, and he's just trying to cover for me.
I'm Spartacus, right.
And then Yelkin loses, he gets kicked out of the school, right? That's what happens?
I don't remember if he actually got kicked out of the school.
Because that's ultimately what leads to Taya Leone killing herself.
Yeah, I guess so.
She kills herself. He goes into possession of like his third cousin or something. And then he convinces Robin Williams to help him escape New York.
Yeah.
And fly to Paris to start a new life.
Yeah, and he, because Robin Williams has to be with him at the airport to pretend to be his dad. So he can get a ticket to Paris. Robin Williams comes through for him. And then he leaves for Paris. And they cut back to present day. The mom is like, the ex-wife?
Yeah, the
French wife is like, oh, so that is why you are a piece of shit?
She's like, escargot?
Huh?
She's like, escargot?
What is
that's how you say snail. And escargot was snail. It's a snail food, you know?
Where I don't.
You suck it out of the shell.
Gross.
Would you eat one?
Nope.
I wouldn't either.
Doesn't sound.
It really doesn't sound
particularly appetizing. Anything with shells. I can't say that because I love crab and lobster.
This cargo.
Actually, you know what? I could maybe. Oh, wait. Do you eat? Is it the green shit you eat?
You eat the whole thing besides the shell. You don't eat the shell, but you suck it all out.
Gross. Nope. Not for me. Not for me. But anyway, she's like, oh, so that is why you're a piece of shit? And he's like, yeah, that is why I'm a piece of shit. I should go back to New York to find her. Find who? The lady from the detention center. Right? That's the whole reason he goes back?
Yeah, he goes back to New York to find her, and he does find her. She's living in an apartment now.
Because the detention center, the House of D, is no longer there. It's now a park.
Yeah. And she's always talking about how they don't have mirrors in the prison.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gifts her a mirror.
Hmm.
And he's like, ah, I squared that circle. And then he finds Robin Williams, who's now old. Impressive old age makeup job.
Yeah, it actually is pretty good old age makeup.
It's quite good.
He didn't want to spend the money on the prosthetics, but he spent the money on the old age makeup.
And so he reconnects with Robin and then brings his family to New York and shows them where he grew up, and the family reconciles.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically it, right?
Yep. That's the movie.
There's a few.
That's the House of D. He goes to a dance with Zelda Williams and they kiss a kid.
So as maybe the best scene of the movie.
Probably.
It's like the dance.
Probably.
It's like a little romantic.
It's like, yeah.
It feels genuine.
Yeah. Zelda Williams, actually pretty good.
Zelda Williams, pretty good. There's the one Nixon scene that I liked. You know.
Oh, yes. I knew about it and I texted you. I was like, there's going to be a moment where this movie speaks to your soul.
He's like, my mom is always depressed, so I would do Richard Nixon impressions to entertainers. Like, I'm not a crook.
And I immediately thought of you.
You did think of me.
We're a little tired.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am not a crook. Stuart, do you know, I brought this up many times where he did the I'm not a crook speech app. I've done this on the show before. He did it at Walt Disney World.
Yes.
It's very funny. I think about him in the contemporary bar. I'm not a crook and like being 50 feet away essentially from Buzz Lightyear Astro Blasters. No, it was before that time. But
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's House of D.
Because
it's like a lot. It's a movie that refuses to be watched. Basically, like you're watching it, and it's just like it's like functionally like you're looking at a gray screen.
Yeah,
just nothing. Nothing absorbs into your eyes and vicariously into your brain.
Because there's no central focus of the movie. There's nothing that the movie is like keeping you hooked in with. Because with the boy with Anton Yelkin, you're just like watching him go about his everyday life. Essentially, there's no like sense. Maybe it's the fact that he doesn't dance, but even then, that's kind of like nothing. If it's the lady, yeah, but that's only like two scenes in the movie. If it's like he has a crush, great, but the movie doesn't like pick on anything up from that after the dance. If it's his mom, okay, but then we don't spend much time with the mom outside of the apartment. If it's his like sexual proclivities, like you know what I mean? Like there's the movie doesn't pick a lane. And so the entire movie, I'm just like kind of phasing in and out of consciousness.
Yeah, very much so.
So I didn't remember much of anything in this movie. And I gave it a half star on Letterboxd. Yeah. It was really
It's
bad.
Not very good.
Robin, performance-wise, a little dicey.
It's dicey. It's once again, it's just like a too treacly Robin performance.
Yeah.
You know?
There's like one scene that I thought it was actually going to be pretty good. And it's the very end where he's like, you know,
he's dropped a lot of the ticks when he's playing the old man version of himself.
Well, he says like, you know, I'm not. And he says like the R word anymore. Yeah. He's like, oh, you're not. It's like, no, because like a few years ago, they started calling me mentally challenged. So now I'm not the R word anymore. Now I'm mentally challenged. Then a few years later, they started calling me mentally handicapped.
Yeah.
So maybe in a few years, I won't be anything.
Yeah.
it was like that one bit with Robin's performance. I thought like, okay, like,
no, he's
doing something.
He's
with
much
that.
Better when he's playing the old man. Cause he's just being like, kind of like a genuine performance.
Yeah.
When he's playing the young Pappas, he's like doing like
things,
too many things.
Yeah.
Too quirky.
Yeah. Ticks and stuff.
Ticks and the prosthetics. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. It looks a little goofy.
Yeah. He's like maybe playing Latino. Unclear.
Oh, because his dad?
His dad's Mark Mogulis.
Yeah.
And he like seems like he has a little bronzer on, but...
Maybe. I don't know. Unclear.
Unclear.
And the movie also doesn't like justify why this older man is hanging out with a little boy.
Yeah.
As much as you might be like, well, he's mentally handicapped and the boy likes him, so they have a good relationship. It's like, it's not enough. I need a little bit more to not feel creeped out by this. Because it's still a little... Because he plays baseball with them.
Yeah.
And it's like any school staff that would see their janitor playing with the kids on the playground would be like...
Ugh. Yeah.
I mean, it's the 70s, so maybe not.
Mm.
I don't know. But also, I don't care enough to ask any of these questions.
Yeah.
Because the movie doesn't ask me to care.
It's nonsensical. Sorry, David. No disrespect.
Maybe a little bit. No, I'm just kidding.
He directed another movie 20 years later.
Was it... Anything?
I don't know.
I don't think so. I think I looked it up and it got worse ratings. I mean, you never want to see a director just like...
You never want to see a movie fail.
You never
want to
see a movie fail, but
they
do. Reverse the Curse.
It got like decent
2023.
Like middle of the road reviews.
Logan Marshall Green's in it.
Someone else is in it too, you know.
When are you gonna say?
Well, they're best friends in real life.
But really?
Yeah.
The guy we're talking about in David?
Yeah.
Or the guy we're talking about in
David.
And Logan. David. Okay. Yes. Where are they friends from?
Life.
Interesting.
Living in Los Angeles.
I might have a thing off air.
Los Angeles.
I might have a thing to talk about off air about it, but anyway. Yeah, this movie was bad. It was hard to pay attention. Jeff, you watched it this morning off of like 3 hours of sleep and a hangover.
I'm exhausted.
I fed you food.
You did. You had to feed me.
You came to my doorstep just like a
shell,
a dried, shriveled up worm.
Yeah.
Like, I need food and water and care and love.
Yes, please. You can water me so I will grow.
Give you some soil.
Give me some soil. Give me a little pat.
A little bit of brisket.
Some mulch. All right. I think that's about all we got to say about this movie, right?
Yep. I got no other thoughts.
Yeah, not our most in-depth episode ever, because the movie is not very deep.
Yeah, it isn't that deep. Because even bad movies we can have a good conversation about. But this movie's just like so milquetoast, so bad, and so just like not interesting.
Yeah.
Like if you're going to make
those things.
If you're going to make a boring, like sad, like... nothing movie, at least make it interesting.
Yeah.
Throw like
make it weird.
Throw like one scene that like makes it weird.
Yeah, throw something weird in.
Throw like a scene where he like, I don't know, fucking talks to Pappas about how hot his mom is. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of something that would be like,
yeah, give me something weird.
See, like, do you see that scene where, like,
yeah, there's no, like, scene where you're like, did you see that?
It's like, this movie's so boring until this happens.
Yeah.
And it's like, nothing in this movie does that. You need to have one thing.
Yeah.
The movie doesn't have one thing. Thank you all so much for listening. If you like this episode, I don't know why you would, but please remember to rate, review, comment, like, subscribe for a platform you're listening on, of which we're on many. Special thanks to Michael Van Bodingen Smith for theme music and Rebecca for the graphic design. Thank you for listening to the House of D. Join us next week for the other animated voice role Rob Williams would be doing in his career. Robots. Robots, which we'll have a good time talking about. I have some good memories of that movie. Yeah, join us all next week for Robots. We'll have a good guest for that one. And we'll see you all then next week.
Bye.